This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Democratic Party's top ticket here in Indiana has been set with gubernatorial candidate as well as the candidate for lieutenant governor. We have both of them with us today. Dr. Woody Myers is a physician based in central Indiana, and his kind of running mate on the ticket is a former state representative Linda Lawson from Hammond, now living in southern Indiana as well. And thank you both for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Tell us a little bit about the setup in getting the ticket together. Dr. Myers, I know you've been kind of delayed, and seemingly so, in getting a running mate named and put on the ticket, but there was reason for that, and I want you to go into that, please, if you will, as well as you, Linda. What were the thoughts that you had in wanting to have the right person on the ticket to be your lieutenant governor candidate?
Well, Chris, I have been talking to people from throughout the state, both in terms of getting advice on who might be a good member of the ticket and whether or not there might be interest. Having had a number of terrific conversations with a whole variety of people, it came down to the final few days, and we had a deadline that was not because of any state rule or law, but because the Indiana Democratic Party had a contract with a printer that needed to get the ballots printed for the virtual convention. And so we said, well, that doesn't seem to us to be like a reason to rush it. So they were able to push that back for a few days until we finished all of our due diligence. And I was just so fortunate, and the state will be as well, that we coaxed Linda out of retirement from her current residence in Nashville. But she spent most of her career, as you may know, up in Hammond, Indiana, where
right.
she did a number of wonderful things. So 23 years in the police department after a two-year struggle to convince then the old boys club that she belonged, and did that successfully, and spent 12-13 years on the school board and then did a great job as a legislator in leadership roles for the Indiana General Assembly. But she's on the phone. Why don't we let her talk
That's
about
right.
those accomplishments? They are clearly the reason why I found her to be an amazingly attractive candidate. In talking to her, she's just got all the right kind of energy, the right way to think about these issues from my perspective. Linda, perhaps I should just turn it over to you.
Thanks so much. First of all, Chris, it's nice to hear your voice. It's been a while.
That's true.
appreciate the invitation. It's no question I really did. I still love the little piece of land I have, and I do love my home, and it's still going to continue to be my home. And I'm only about an hour away from Indianapolis, so it's not going to be the 2.5-hour, three-hour drive that is back to Hammond, Indiana. So this is my home. I love it here, and I love being in Brown County, but I realize that the state needs something right now, and what it needs is a partnership between Dr. Woody Myers and myself to move the state forward. I think together we can, in our combined experience and our combined knowledge, that we can lead Indiana in the right direction with his medical and his business experience, along with my experience in law enforcement, being on the Hammond School Board, and 20 years in the General Assembly. I think that we have come up with a great team. Lots of support. We've got, additionally, we have lots of support from our prospective teams. And moving together, I think that there's probably not any issue or anything that we can't come together. I spent a lot of time talking to Woody, and I realized that in a crisis that we're in, there's no better person to lead this state. I believe that we're not done with this virus. I think that Woody is absolutely right. We're opening our state too soon. We're taking risks that we shouldn't be taking with Hoosier lives. And certainly in the fall, come November, we'll only have a couple of months before Woody will be on board with the blue wave, and we're going to make this happen, and we'll have a new governor in January of 2021.
Thank you, Linda. And I want to get with you especially here about education, but let's hear first from Dr. Myers. And on the platform planks, healthcare is right at the top of the list, and we know that's the major concern right now with the coronavirus pandemic that we are in. And your concern about the rising cases in Indiana, I understand.
Yes, I am. I know that we did not meet the CDC criteria for reopening the state, but we did it anyway, and although there are some stages there that are, in my view, a little confusing, and different counties are in and out, and some businesses have different rules, and I just know that even if you wanted to follow the rules, it's hard to do, but nonetheless, it's still premature, in my view. The real goal is to get your cases down for several weeks in a row through social isolation. That had not been accomplished. We still have a number of hot spots in the state. And the virus doesn't know, Chris, that it's crossed the Marin County border and it's now in Hamilton County. The virus doesn't know that the rules are different across 96th Street and from Cass County to a neighboring county. So that makes it difficult for people to do the right thing, and I think that the major goal of reopening the economy is to engender confidence that things are moving in a good direction, so that people will choose to participate in the economy, and that people will feel comfortable going into stores or starting to think about school again, and that we didn't achieve. And so now that we have a number of businesses open, a couple of them are doing okay, but the majority of them aren't even getting back to the limited 25% or 50% that they've been given because of the people that would have normally go to use those businesses aren't going because they're not yet comfortable being out in a public where the cases are continuing to go up. So all that's to say that I think we moved too quickly, and I think that that's put us in danger. We have not figured out as a state a better approach to nursing homes. We're going to be offering that tomorrow in a press event that we're putting together today. So I just believe that Indiana should take its lead from the old CDC, not the new one that's been somewhat neutered by the current administration, but take it from the old CDC and do the right thing.
Let's talk about education, if we will, please. And Linda, if you would start us off on that, what are your thoughts about what the platform should look like to bring improvements to education here in Indiana if elected as Lieutenant Governor and, of course, as Dr. Myers as Governor?
Well, Woody and I have both talked about, you know, putting people before politics, and there's no better place for us to put that phrase at use before public education and what's happened there. I think the state of Indiana, under the control that it's been under for the last several years, has really disenfranchised the people who need the most when it comes to education. And those are the young men and women in neighborhoods that have been disenfranchised. There's the whole theme of charter schools, the disproportionate amount of money that has gone into charter schools, and the addition of all of the schools where the same amount of money has been divided. And it's just, it's unfair. It's unfair to those inner city kids that have been left behind. So we need to address charter schools. We need to address how we feel about public education. Also the staffing needs. Teachers have been left behind when it comes to increased salaries. They've been left behind when it comes to support. And so we need to do whatever we can to make sure that our public schools are strong and that our staff and our teachers are taken care of.
Okay. I know one of the other major issues that you have that's on the ticket as you both consider the Democratic gubernatorial party ticket, Dr. Myers, you as governor candidate, and Linda as the lieutenant governor candidate, is economic development. Dr. Myers, you as a businessman as well as a physician, and Linda, you as a former state lawmaker who's made many trips over the decades to Indianapolis to fight for economic development for Northwest Indiana at the time. What do you feel that should be done on a statewide level that can make improvements for everybody in that particular realm?
Well, Chris, the whole whole landscape, as you are well aware, as your listeners are as well, has changed in the last couple of months. We've gone from a state with relatively low unemployment. We did have underemployment and still do. But we've gone from a state with relatively low unemployment to now approximately 20%, and we don't know whether that's going to go up or down. We have people today, Chris, in food lines here at Indianapolis that are thousands of cars long, people that never, ever thought they would need that kind of assistance bringing their cars in to try to get that assistance just to be able to make ends meet with their family meals. We know that we've got to do Herculean work to get Indiana's economy moving again, and I propose that we concentrate in an area that I think the state is well positioned to concentrate in, and that's all of the equipment necessary for this and the next pandemic. The personal protective equipment that was in the news daily for almost a month, we still haven't sourced that locally as well as we might, so I would provide incentives for companies to make all the various forms of personal protective equipment here in Indiana so that we never, ever find ourselves in a situation again where we can't get what we need or it's being blocked from overseas to get here and or the products are inferior. Although the ventilator issue seems to have been currently managed, there are other forms of medical equipment that are needed in the intensive care units that I know we could do a good job making here as well. Because, you know, Chris, we are one day's drive from about 80% of the American population. From a distribution standpoint, Indiana is ideally positioned. So let's take advantage of that in an area we know is important and will grow. So that will be a focus of the Myers-Lawson administration, is to use all of our powers, all of our economic development talent to make Indiana a real hub for medical supplies. And that, I think, will help us to get our economy moving again. We'll still need to do work in agriculture and manufacturing, and we'll still need to work with the CEOs of the big companies like General Motors. General Motors has 6,800 employees in Indiana today. I want it to go to 7,800 during the first term of a Myers-Lawson administration, so we'll have to work with the CEO to figure out what we could do to make that happen. Anybody in retail knows that your best customer, Chris, is the one you already have. And so we've got to take those companies that are already here and figure out what we could do as a state to help them not only to stay here but to grow. So that'll be what we focus on.
Linda Lawson, what are your thoughts here going along with the workforce development issue on the problems that we have faced now, as also in trying to build for a better Indiana economy for the future?
I agree completely with Dr. Myers. You know, it's amazing that there's so many things out there that we can redirect and change and make sure that we use that to the benefit of the people who will be looking for jobs and the people that need to go back to jobs. I mean, the whole idea that this coronavirus is going to be over with by November 3rd is probably a pie in the sky. We need to be able to direct the services that we have now and recreate ways that we can better serve the people in Indiana. That way we can hire and employ more Hoosiers to do maybe a different job that are working in the same plant.
Dr. Myers and Ms. Lawson, if you will, give us your thoughts briefly here on another plank that's up before the voters this year on the Democratic Party for the gubernatorial ticket, and that's involving Indiana's climate control and the issues about the environment.
We have not paid enough attention to those, Chris, as most Hoosiers are aware. We're very fortunate that we're in the temperate part of the country. We've got a great water table, but the environment and climate go hand in hand, and we are not taking good care. We're not the great stewards of those the resources that we have. Climate change has affected the way that our farmers plant and when they plant. It's made both temperature and precipitation far less predictable. Partly because we are still burning an enormous amount of fossil fuels in Indiana. That's especially true. So in a Myers-Lawson administration, we are going to emphasize renewables. We are going to emphasize both the solar and wind and bring those back to the forefront. They've been kind of pushed to the side as the coal industry in our state has found a way into the unfortunately, the hearts and minds, if not the pocketbooks, of some of our legislators. And I just know that the renewables are the way that we should be producing energy now and in the future. So that'll be the direction that we take. It's less polluting. There'll be jobs associated with it. And clearly the opportunities there just are boundless. In the old days, Chris, it was said that you couldn't do wind in Indiana because we didn't have enough wind. Well, they were wrong. The technology today is so much better. In the old days, they said you couldn't do solar in Indiana. We didn't have enough sun. Well, they were wrong. As you can see by seeing the giant solar fields that are beginning to populate the state, we just need much more of both of those. And our administration, that's where we're going to focus.
Well, Linda Lawson, I'll give you the last word, if you will, kind of talking this same topic here from the standpoint of the environmental problems in Northwest Indiana in particular. You're very familiar with those. How can you tell voters in Southeast Indiana that it's just as important for them as it is up here in the Northwest corner?
First, I'd just like to say I remember the excitement I felt driving up and down I-65, watching the windmills go up.
Oh, yes.
And the change in the landscape. And it was like, I can't believe it. There are things that we can do here. What was going on in Northwest Indiana with the lead content, schools closing, kids getting sick. There are lots of places in the state of Indiana where things are just as bad. The thing about, or the question about Southeast Indiana in the coal mines, and the production of coal, I would just like to say that there are things that we can do as far as providing different employment, working with the industry to make sure that people are taken care of, that they have a paycheck at the end of the month. There are ways that we can create, and what things we can do and things we can create that would make a better place for all Hoosiers to live in, including those in southwestern Indiana, where the coal mines are still active. Mm-hmm. There are good jobs that would be union jobs that would give people a fair wage, a retirement, and way to feed their families. So there's stuff that we can do environmentally, and we want to get on it right away.
Well, Linda and Dr. Myers, we'll have to leave it there for now. We'll be back again soon and talk in more detail about the issues that are coming up. And thank you for spending time with us today as kind of an introductory session, so to speak, about your candidacy that Hoosiers will see on the Democratic Party ballot across Indiana for this coming election on June 2nd and the one coming up in November. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Linda Lawson is the lieutenant governor candidate, and Dr. Woody Myers is the candidate for governor. They're both running on the Indiana Democratic Party ticket. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. The Gary Community School Corporation is, of course, as the rest of us through the pandemic, going through distance learning, I guess they call it. It's learning by computer as opposed to being in the classroom since schools are out right now. And some students in the Gary Community School Corporation are trying to deal with technology that maybe their families don't have. Well, the school corporation is getting help from some partners, in particular the ECR Foundation, which is partnering with the Wisconsin-based energy company Michaels and the Indiana American Water Company to help provide some laptops for Gary area school students to help them in their online lessons. And with us, we have the founder and chairperson with the ECR Foundation, Cherise White, with us. Cherise, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, take a moment first and tell us what the ECR Foundation is all about. So people that may not be familiar with it, they'll see how the organization, locally based and created, is helping folks locally.
The acronyms for ECR: E is for Educate, C is Communicate, I is Innovate, E is for Entrepreneurs, and R is for Relationships. And the foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was created to educate, empower, and equip our youth to realize their full potential and achieve their dreams through innovation and entrepreneurship. The foundation is designed to enhance, motivate, educate students on structured initiatives and increase the students' awareness in the area of college preparation, along with providing an opportunity to receive scholarships.
Nice to have Michaels. Being an energy-related company, they're very much familiar with new technology. That's part of their business, as a matter of fact, in the energy business. So they're easily adaptable to helping organizations out. How did they come into play in this particular case with the laptops going to students in the Gary schools?
We have a board member. Paige Rothrock is a board member, and she works for Michael. And what we have done is, since we can't meet with our students, we generally meet with them twice a month. And first part of the month, what we do is work with them on their projects. And the end of the month, we take them to an entrepreneur's location. So Paige had set it up for one of her colleagues to be able to provide a workshop for the students. And so now, since we can't meet with them, we were trying to be innovative and meet with them through Cisco WebEx, which is on the same order as Zoom. And so we've met with them, we've hosted workshops, but prior to that, we've been calling and texting them just to let them know that we're here for them, care for them, whatever it is that they need. And so Paige asked one day, she wanted to call them individually instead of texting them to see what they actually needed. Mm-hmm. And she talked to a parent, and a parent told her that she has two computers in her home and seven children.
Yeah, that's where I suspect that's probably pretty much the case, that there may be, may not be in some cases, though, may be computers, but they're all busy, and a student can't be able to dedicate one for their education. They have to share it with so many people.
That's correct. When Paige shared that with us, that she talked to her colleagues at work, and they agreed to donate laptops. So I sent an email to the rest of our board members, and we also have a board member, Francisco Ochoa, and he is with the Indiana American Water, and they responded and donated computers as well.
That's great. I understand you have some other partners in this venture as well, too, a couple local ones.
Right. Chicagoland Popcorn came along with us and donated popcorn for the students and their families. And John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club, Rose is so wonderful. We partnered with her to be able to work with the students. So the students that are in our program were initially from the Boys and Girls Club.
Wow. Now, the Boys and Girls Club, the John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club, is located here in Lake County, and they obviously have a chance to see a lot of these youngsters on a regular basis, don't they? So they're very much attuned to helping their educational process in this time of a pandemic.
Absolutely. They have anywhere from 200 to 300 students that attend on a daily basis. So, you know, this has affected them as well. So, you know, whatever that we can do to be able to be help, that's what we were standing in to do.
If you will, go down the list of the students and where they normally go to school. Tell us who all is involved in the project, getting the laptops, and what kind of benefits they're getting now to see from it.
Well, we have students from various schools, the Gary, Westside, Steel City Academy, 21st Century, Calumet New Tech, Thea Bowman. So it's a wide range.
Yeah.
We have 14 students in the program.
That's great. When they got their laptops by way of the folks with not only the ECR Foundation, but with Michaels and Indiana American Water, what was the reaction when they actually got a chance to hold their own laptop?
They were so excited and really, really appreciative. And when we distributed them, we had them to come up to the Boys and Girls Club. We had their parents to bring them. We didn't want to just have to drop off the student, pick it up, and then leave. So mm-hmm. we asked the parents to stay. And they were really excited. We tried to make it like a little small miniature event for them. And then in addition to them receiving laptops, they also received the popcorn. So they were really excited. And you can tell that some of them didn't have them at home, and they're just really in need. You know, you go from being in school every day to basically being snatched out of school to go home to do e-learning, and if that was not taught to you, you know, prior to, so some of that could have just been a challenge. We did have a student to say it was a little hard for her because when you're in class, you're working directly with the teachers. Now she's receiving more work, and it's a little harder for her when the teacher is not here in front of her.
Are there any other projects related to this one or other projects that the ECR Foundation is on the drawing board with or actually getting started on here besides the laptop program?
Yes, we will be working with them through the summer. But I can tell you this, we have two programs under the umbrella, the ECR students that I mentioned meeting with them mm-hmm. on their innovation and entrepreneurship. And then we also are a partner with the city of Gary 2 years ago, engaged in awarding scholarships to students for post-high school study. And the pool of those students that are graduating seniors have been accepted for admission to an accredited two-year four-year college. So what happens is, at the beginning of the school year, we provide them with specific requirements, and once they have completed those requirements and it's been approved by the advisory council, the students have an opportunity to receive scholarships. So what we do is, in addition to the workshops we've been having, we have blended both the groups in together to have an opportunity to learn from one of our speakers that have been with us. So we're excited. We know that we're a little challenged what we can do and what the possibility of the new normal is. So we are anticipating being able to continue to be involved with them.
Well, Charisse, thank you for all the information, and good luck to everybody involved in the project. And congratulations to all the recipients of the laptops to help keep their learning up in this very trying time for everybody and for them to be sure.
Well, you know, thank you. And I just wanted to share, if anyone would like to make donations, they're welcome to visit our website, which is www.eseer.org.
Charisse White is the founder and the chairperson for the Easier Foundation. Easier Foundation is partnering with the Wisconsin-based energy company Michaels, and along with Indiana American Water Company and local businesses, the Chicagoland Popcorn, as well as the John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club here in Lake County, to help make sure that the students attending school in the Gary area, not only in the Gary Community Schools, but schools around it, will have an opportunity to continue their education at home with their own laptops. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. These days, during the COVID-19 pandemic here in Northwest Indiana and the rest of the state and the rest of the country, for that matter, we're all looking for ways to help each other out, and particularly for families to be able to deal with all of these issues that have come across, that have come about because of the pandemic, and to be able to stay together. And we note that there is a special project, a 10-week initiative that is being created down at Purdue University on the main campus at West Lafayette that is offering some materials for family and child resilience as we're all facing these daily challenges. The program is called Families Tackling Tough Times Together. And we have with us to talk about it the creators of the program. We have Purdue University Professor Shelley McDermott Wadsworth. She is the director of the Center for Families, and she's also the director of Military Family Research Institute on the West Lafayette campus. And Professor Wadsworth, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Well, this is a very interesting project. There are all kinds of initiatives that are out there, and now we have one that's out there that's able to be done by family members online, since technically we're not supposed to leave home unless there's some real big reason. But this is a reason to bring everybody together. Will you tell us first some of the thoughts that you and your colleagues there on campus had in creating this particular initiative?
Well, we too have families, all of us who are at Purdue, and you know, we're scientists at home trying to think about how we can help others. And I think we're just so aware of all of the reasons that families want to take good care of each other now. Parents want to help their kids, and families are getting to spend time together that they might never have thought that they could.
Mm-hmm.
And so this seems like a terrific opportunity to try to not only support parents and kids and other family members in coping with the pandemic, but while they do that, actually building the resilience of their families. And so we wanted to put something together that would make it very easy for families to do that while they just go through their daily lives.
Has a lot of this material, at least in theory, been brought up in the past, been worked together and maybe some other initiatives in the past, but this is the great opportunity to bring everything together into this one particular initiative?
Yes, this is an initiative that was put together very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
A very large team of people at Purdue volunteered to chip in. We call it a pop-up program in some ways. And so we decided that it was much more important for us to curate and find good materials that are based on evidence than it would be to try to create new things so fast. And so instead of just preparing lists for families of websites they can go to and giving them more research to do, we've tried to put together a collection each week of activities that are tied to a particular resilience theme that are easy to do, and then we make them available in multiple formats so that it's very easy for families to access them, even if they don't have much bandwidth at their home, or they don't have a printer, or they've got 10 people sharing a computer. I'm just trying to make it really easy for families.
Will you go through the list, since this is a 10-week initiative as it's created, how each week is set up, and if you participate in the Families Tackling Tough Times Together initiative, what you'll get to be able to learn and to participate in?
So first of all, we're running this through a Facebook group, and it's a public group, so anybody can join. There's no obligation. That is the name of the Facebook group, so it's easy to find. We release materials each week because we're building this plane as we fly it, but there's no requirement that families use the materials in any particular order. They can go back and use things multiple times or skip through, whatever works for them. But we're organizing this according to a framework for family resilience that's very well regarded, because we wanted to, you know, do good science while we do this. And so each week, we pick a different theme and a different resilience skill, and we put together materials for parents, children, youth, young adults, older adults, and also helping our communities that families can use at home with each other. The first week, which was last week, we released a set of materials, 2 weeks ago, called Sharing a Positive Outlook. And so everything that week focused on ways to help each other look at the current circumstances with a positive lens and try to find the good things, because that has many positive implications for our health and also how we get along with others. This week is Collaborative Problem Solving Week. So we're trying to provide activities that will help families solve problems together and help improve problem-solving skills, not just among adults, but also among kids. And then each week coming, we'll pick a different theme and have activities related to those themes. We also really want this to be a community of support, so we're encouraging families to contribute back to the community and share messages with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have interviews with families who have faced tough times, both military and civilian families, and we'll be posting clips from those interviews in case they're helpful to others. And we also have challenges. So this week we have the Kitchen Sink Cookie Challenge, where one of the activities for this week is a baking activity that gives folks an opportunity to practice problem solving in a fun way. And we're looking forward to seeing pictures of all those kitchen sink cookies.
I know that there are a lot of different elements that you have in this from week to week to week through the 10 weeks. You mentioned about some already here about ones that's entitled Believing, Sharing, and Acting. And some of them I know are very, very positive in a way, in that they kind of deal with the psychology of being trapped together as a unit in a very tough situation. In this case, we're talking about, number one, a pandemic. Number two, we're talking about stay-at-home orders as a result to be able to keep the pandemic under control, or hopefully so. But you're also finding an opportunity, I imagine, too, to be able to offer some kind of, as you say, in part of the feedback opportunity, to help offer some communication that families can have with somebody outside of the home, because they feel like they're trapped in the house and they've lost contact with the world at large. And this is a good way, I suppose, to be able to make that contact.
That's what we hope. I mean, we certainly do want to support and encourage families as they face this tough challenge. But there are two really important things that I hope everyone can remember. First, every family has strengths. And we've gotten very focused on problems and things that urgently require attention. But it is so important to remember that every family has strengths. So using those strengths to cope with the pandemic. And we simply wanted to help them find ways to build those strengths further, because that'll help them cope with the current situation, but also future situations. The other thing that is very important is that especially for children, but also for adults, this is a life-altering event, just like 9/11 was for many people, like the Depression was for many people. None of us is probably ever going to experience anything quite like this again. And so this becomes part of children's future in a way, that they will reflect on this experience as they grow. And so for families, it's important not just to cope with this experience, but to savor it and capture the stories that it brings into their family, because those will be the stories that children will tell in the future. And we can shape what those stories are. Are there going to be stories of triumph and perseverance, or are they going to be stories of upset and vulnerability? Mm-hmm. And we want to help families find the positive ways to go forward, because that will make it easier to deal with the coming months as well.
And we had this opportunity to tantalize our listeners with more about this 10-week initiative, which is called Families Tackling Tough Times Together. If you'd like to be involved, or you know somebody in the family that would like to be involved, how can you do so?
All they have to do is go to the Facebook group, Families Tackling Tough Times Together, and join. Anybody can join. We hope in the next 2-3 weeks to have a website up where we will post all of the materials as well. And these materials are not time-sensitive. They can be used anytime, in any order. We don't want to create obligations for families, just resources.
Well, sounds like a wonderful program. And even though you had to create it literally like spinning on a dime when things really got started here, and you knew that there would be a lot of problems out there for families all across not only Indiana but the entire nation, we hope that they take advantage of this. And we thank you very much, Professor Wadsworth, for talking about this. And we hope all the best for you folks down at West Lafayette, that you all we can get through this and we can take advantage of this as a learning session, I guess. Maybe this will even result in some more initiatives like this in the future.
Well, it has made us think a little bit about what it can take to rapidly deploy something in the aftermath of a crisis. And it is giving us some thoughts about maybe ways that we could be helpful to families facing other kinds of crises in the future. But right now, our focus is just on families who are dealing with the pandemic and wanting to try to support them as best we can, given current circumstances. And I really thank you for your interest. And I hope lots of folks will participate.
Well, let's hope so, too. Thank you very much, Dr. Wadsworth, for talking about this today.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Shelley McDermott Wadsworth is the director for the Center for Families, and she's also the director of the Military Family Research Institute. They're both established at Purdue University on the West Lafayette campus. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. And that's it for a special edition of Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Chris Nolte, and I hope you'll join us for Regionally Speaking tomorrow.